So the question was asked, do movements within Judaism have to have the leadership and the guidance of a gadol, of someone great who's leading them? And the truth is that I think the answer is pretty obvious. That how does one know if what he's doing is right or wrong? The Reform movement also thought that they had good ideas. And Shabtai Tzvi also thought he had good ideas. And people reached the worst conclusions and brought the greatest destruction to the Jewish people because they thought they had good ideas. So the fact that someone thinks something is a good idea doesn't mean that he should pursue it. So if there's a movement that's starting within Judaism, so it could be positive, it could be negative. If we don't have the leaders saying whether to follow it or not, so then we can make big mistakes. There was a situation in Europe 150 years ago where the women didn't know how to read Hebrew, and the women knew almost nothing when it came to Judaism. And you had women going to movies not so many years ago, and their husbands were learning. Their husbands were a long pace. If you see pictures, Hasidic pictures from 100 years ago, you'll see the women dressed in low-cut skirts. They're dressed like any non-Jewish woman in the street, without all the modesty that you'd expect. And the husband has these long forelocks. And he's this pious chassid. And he asked, how did these two get married? And it was a normal phenomenon of the last century that the men were very, very pious. And the women knew very little about Judaism. They knew they wanted their husbands learning Torah. It's an important thing. That's how the house should be. But they were doing 100 other things, and they weren't so connected. Along came Sarah Schneer, and she said, we have to change things. We have to have education for girls. We have to open a Beis Yaakov. So she went to her rabbi, I think it was the Ger Rebbe at the time, and she said, I want to start schools for Jewish girls. It can't be this way that the Jewish girls are getting educated by non-Jews, and they're learning how to be like non-Jews, and the Jewish girls know nothing about Torah, and they're running the Jewish home. What's going to be? And he told her, you have my blessing. And she went from one great rabbi to another, got their blessing. She said, the Ger Rebbe, I think he was the first one. He agreed, do you agree too? She got the support of a few of the great rabbis of the time. And she started Beis Yaakov. And the fact that today we see women educated and could read and could daven and all that, that begins with her. But she too, before she began, went and consulted. We see she was successful. You had people who said, how could it be that Jews aren't learning Tanakh? Jews don't understand Hebrew. You must learn Tanakh. And we must analyze the language. And their intent wasn't so bad initially. And these were the maskilim. Their intent was to connect us with the Tanakh. Their intent wasn't so bad initially, but the ways they went about it and their forms of analysis and their conclusions, those ultimately were the roots for the Reform movement, which we don't have to expand on, but I will put up an article or two for you guys to read, because guys have asked a lot of questions about Reform and Conservative. So I meant to put up articles you'll see on Rav Listman's door. You'll read about the roots of Reform and Conservative, and you'll have a better picture of what exactly happened there. They didn't have bad intentions on the surface. I don't know whether they did or didn't really have bad intentions, but on the surface their claims were valid. They said, halachically, you could daven in any language. So why should we daven in Hebrew? Let's daven in English. Eventually, that led their innovations and their lack of tradition and their attitude that we can make changes in Judaism led to their saying, let's change the Shmona Esrei. Why should we pray about going back to Israel? Who cares about Israel? We're here. We're among the nations and we're doing fine. We should remain here. So they changed the prayer. That they were forbidden to do. That way of tradition we may not change. So they broke all bounds, but their beginnings seemed innocent. The average Jew saw their beginnings was very attracted to the Maskilim movement. That's why the Malbim put his compilation. He didn't compile his work in order to convince people not to become Reform. He compiled his work because he saw the average Jew was being attracted by the Maskilim's claim. You have to understand Hebrew. You have to learn Tanakh. So the Malbim said, I'll show you that us rabbis have a better tradition, a better understanding, and within his explanation, he shows how a mastery that's just genius of each word in Tanakh and the application and the discernment between the different words that seem to have the same meaning. You have many, many words that seem to say the same thing. And the Malbim shows us how each word has its specific meaning. There are no two words in Hebrew that have the same meaning and a specific application. So the Malbim showed a tremendous mastery of language and revealed to us an understanding that we had, but wasn't put forth clearly and explicitly black and white. The Malbim lived about 150 years ago. He did that to show the average Jew to pull him back. Don't go with the maskilim. But the average Jew saw it. It seemed like it had innocent intent, and only the rabbis were able to see through it and see where it was headed. And they were right. History has proven them right. But that's why any movement that begins should have the rabbis giving their stamp of approval. And if it doesn't, then I'd be very careful before I join.
One second.
So,
just to finish that point.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm saying that's it. I just basically, I seem to be. I mean, there seems to have been attacks on the Jews. There have been attacks on the Jews. Okay. On that they don't have true Golem today. So that in each generation they had rough books. In our generation, like everybody, I don't know perhaps it is politics, but that everybody goes to other great rabbis. How true is that?
I don't know. I think that Rav Avram Shapiro is a very, very big Talmid Chacham. I don't think that anyone can contend with his stature. And this is a question really which has been raised towards the end of last semester. There was a whole class on this. I think it deserves a whole class. I think you should raise it with Rav Lisman. I don't know if he wants to give a class on it, or Rav Goldenberg. It's a very, very valid question, and it has answers which you should hear. But you should. We have to talk. You talk to Rav Lisman. You have all Shabbos with him. Talk to him and get. Talk to Rav Lisman. It's an issue in and of itself. What is the validity of religious Zionists, and which great rabbis say it is right? So
because I understand that the origins, my question was that in every generation, does there have to be that great leader, that leader that leads the, let's say, the group there, which has a certain ashkasha?
I think that groups evolve. So religious Zionists in one generation did one thing, and another generation did another, and in our generation there are big questions, and the religious Zionist movement is facing many, many difficult questions. You'll find today that there is a very big rift within the religious Zionist movement as to what is our attitude to the army, what is our attitude to the state, what is our obligation to the army, to the Torah, to the state. And an example of that was what happened with the destruction of Gush Katif, where you had people saying you must obey what the army tells you, and you had Rav Avram Shapiro who said, what do you mean? It's against halacha, and no Jew may do that, even if it costs him his job. You can't do something that is forbidden. And I don't want to enter the politics of it. I'm just mentioning that you can't say that the movement exists and is static. The movement is not static, and therefore it needs to have its leaders. Now, going beyond those details, I think you should ask your listener and have a whole class on it. Not for 2 minutes, and we have to end in 2 minutes. You guys have to go to Slichot. Yeah. We're not finishing, but the guys who go to Slichot go. Yeah.
I understand it. If someone has like their own kind of ego in their movement, if they start moving because they think it's the right and they like, it's their own egotistical, then I think that's how it gets corrupted. Otherwise, if it's done with like pure intention,
no,
then it will lead to like.
So you're saying if it's pure intentions, it'll be right, and our sages say not that way. Our sages say Yiftach Jefti, when he killed his daughter, he had very good intentions. He thought he was fulfilling a vow, and he messed up.
No, because he had an element of obviously selfishness.
What?
Because obviously he had an element of selfishness.
No, so our sages say that it wasn't a point of selfishness, but rather Enam Aretz Chassid. If a person is not learned, as much as he tries to be a pious person, he will not be successful. In order to be a truly good person, a chassid, one has to know Torah. Rabbi Akiva says that when he started learning, he once came across a corpse in the middle of the desert, and he carried it a long distance in the heat of the desert to give it proper burial. And the sages said, you're going to pay the price for every footstep you took, because halachically, you're not allowed to move the corpse. It's painting the corpse, it's detaining its burial. If it's a corpse that no one knows where it came from, you should bury it on the spot. The corpse has a right to the land wherever it dies. Every human being is entitled to take ownership of land. If he dies in the middle of the desert, he takes ownership of that plot of land, and you bury him there. You shouldn't have carried him to civilization. That's not called giving him a proper burial. Rabbi Akiva said, look, I tried to be the most pious Jew. I carried this corpse through the desert sun for such a distance. And as much as I tried to be a good person, I ended up messing up. And I'm going to pay in heaven for what I did, which I thought was truly positive. And he wasn't being selfish. He was trying to do what's right. Oh, so in prayer, the heart connects. And we're not saying that there's no value for being pure at heart. And obviously we try to be pure at heart. But bottom line, if you're going to... I didn't say he was breaking halacha. Fine. So we came to illustrate a point. That,
you say the community by breaking halacha.
What?
You say the community by breaking halacha.
Could be that his not knowing the halacha, you're going into a lot of the halachic aspects. So it could be that he didn't know the halacha, and therefore that God was going to forgive him, and he would learn the halacha and he'd do better. But his prayer that he did through that still had value. I don't know how it works in heaven. You're asking me the values of heaven. But halacha is that you have to perform halacha, and if you don't, it's not right, and the purest intents aren't good enough. Come.